Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Welcome, everyone, to Aggressive Negotiations, that little corner of the Star Wars universe you just can't keep from stopping by. I am just one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as he is always, the magnificent John Mills.
Ooh, magnificent. I like that. I like that. Magnificent. Yeah, I like it. I like that adjective. I don't know if it applies.
Well, I try, man. I really do. So I work hard to make sure that you feel comfortable, you know?
That's good. This is our Star Wars space, our shared Star Wars space, and we should be comfortable here. It is a pleasure, as always, to be discussing Star Wars with you, Matt.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited to be here. You know, it is kind of crazy, John, to think that as of this recording, and when it comes out, we will only be a few days away from a brand new Star Wars film.
Yes, a brand new episode, no less.
Yeah. Which I mean, I am very excited about. I have been staying away from any spoilers, so I haven't really heard anything. I've seen a couple of small little things, but I'm not even going to talk about them here, of course. And I haven't been watching any more trailers or TV spots. I've been trying to stay away from them. In fact, recording everything on the DVR so I can buzz through everything so I don't see something I don't want to see, basically, you know. So, yeah, I don't want to know, because I want to be surprised by this film. And honestly, from everything I feel like we have seen, I feel like we are going to be surprised. And that's exciting for me. I'm actually very excited. I don't know how excited other people are, because I've been kind of staying away from the fandom online. So
yeah, it's funny to sort of operate in this podcast space where we talk about Star Wars all the time. But like you, I've stayed away from everything. I have actually muted things so effectively that I don't even see it mentioned. Doesn't matter who or what. Like, I have not just hashtags, but the actual words. Like, if you say something like, "Oh, it's a beautiful star tonight. Too bad there are wars in the world," I'm not going to see it. Like, it's that hardcore. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, you know, I try my best.
Well, no, I'm really right there with you. Like, I don't want people to take away the joy of me seeing a new Star Wars film and take away the joy of, you know, just getting to live it. You know, I don't want somebody to ruin that for me. So I'd rather just enjoy seeing it, you know, next week. And
yeah.
So yes, if I'm not around, folks, it's not because I don't like you online. If you're not seeing me there, it's not because I'm not excited or anything like that. I just don't want your spoiler pants to ruin my non-spoiler
pants. Let's qualify it, though, and say that it's not necessarily that he doesn't like you or that I don't like. It's not necessarily.
That's true.
It could be a factor, but you'll never know. You'll never know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Let's not go there. I'm not going to say that I don't like people on the show. Just kidding. No, I love you all. Thank you so much for listening. Before we dive into the topic that we do have this week, that does have something to kind of do actually with The Last Jedi, I think we're going to have a lot of fun doing that. But John, people can find us all over the place. You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. You can also find us under The Jedi Masters on Twitter. That's the show account. We'd love to be able to talk to you guys. In fact, we just love interacting with you guys. We've had some great interactions over the last few weeks talking about things and you know, kind of seeing what people's expectations are for the Last Jedi and everything. We did a poll over on the Jedi Masters talking a little bit about, you know, if people were really kind of looking at anything, if they were going to be looking at new trailers, if they were seeking out spoilers. And it looked like majority of the people are actually going to be staying away from stuff, which I applaud them. You know, there's no reason to ruin it. Most people, it seemed like if they were looking at anything, it was only what was official.
Yeah.
Which, again, I think that's the way to go. You know, don't ruin something for yourself. So,
you know, I think actually also it speaks to the fervor is different. The vibe is different this time around. Like Force Awakens had this huge tidal wave of the unknown and the unexpected and what was coming and so different and wild and oh my gosh. Whereas I think this one is people have learned so much from that first couple of cycles with Star Wars and Rogue One that it's so easy to blow a lot of stuff from it. And so I think people are probably more measured now. They're wiser, if you will, which is funny because you could almost make the argument that like the Marvel, you know, part of the Disney family, the Marvel marketing has helped contribute to that because people know, okay, here comes the onslaught. It's 3 months beforehand. I'm shutting down all of the words and hashtags and stuff like that so that I see nothing.
Yep.
I think people have wised up to it. They understand the cycle better at this point.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a good thing, you know, and we have definitely done our best to not be part of that for you guys. You know, we'll have a great time talking about the movie once it comes out and once it's there for everybody to enjoy. But there's no way that we want to kind of do anything to ruin that for you guys. You know, we'll have plenty of time to dissect the actual movie once it arrives. So we're very excited to be able to do that soon. It's right around the corner, so we don't have to wait too long. Again, you can find us all over the place, and one of the best places to find us is over on iTunes. It's a great place to give us a review and a star rating. Let people know that you're really enjoying the show. That helps people find us, so I hope that you will do that. And hey, if you give us a star rating and review, we always mention people on the show. So you will hear your review called out and thanked no matter what you have to say about the show. We're not, you know, we don't just pick out 5-star reviews or anything. That's not our style.
We're not the first order here. We don't control your message.
No, absolutely. No. We will make sure that whatever you have to say about the show is heard on the show. And so, check us out there. Of course, you can find us on thenerdparty.com, where you can also check out every single show that we're doing on the network. We have a lot of great shows here. We've got, you know, Outpost, Great Shot Kid, Punch It. I mean, the list goes on and on. So I really do encourage you, go over there, check those out. And if you're there and maybe you want to have a conversation with John and I a little bit deeper, we would love to have that happen. You can go over to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Aggressive Negotiations, and that will come to John and I, and we'll be able to talk about whatever it is that you have an interest in writing us about. So that's always exciting, so make sure you do that.
Yes, and let me say, there's absolutely no limit on the topic. Maybe Matt doesn't want to talk with me necessarily about variations of desserts from planet to planet. On the menus that they offer. But if you mentioned it, he'd kind of be boxed in and have to. I'm just putting it out there. Just a crazy thought just came
into
my head.
That's true. I mean, if enough people wanted us to talk about what desserts look like on different planets, you know, I think I would be forced to do that. I'm thinking of all of the tentacled desserts that they've got to be on Mon Cal.
I am thinking,
right?
Ooh, oh wow. Would Mon Cal and Quarren eat each other? Would there be something, not necessarily in the more advanced like social stage that they're at in the time of the movies, but like would there have been something like, is there some sort of like species grudge where like one used to eat the other on the food chain and stuff like that, right?
And that's a good question.
On top of that, like, I mean, the challenges of being a chef in the Star Wars galaxy.
Oh, geez, that's a great, oh man, can you imagine? Like, honestly, like, let's just talk about that for just one second before we dive in. Like, can you imagine having a, you have this massive get together, right? And you've got all of these people that you've got to take care of. How in the world do you create a menu that kind of like makes everybody happy?
Right. And on top of that, even if you're just talking about different humans, like from Alderaan and Chandrila and Coruscant, aren't their digestive sensibilities going to have evolved differently over time? So you could serve something to somebody from Alderaan that's lethal to somebody from Yavin, or, you know, pick something out of a hat. Like, how do you, How do you avoid
absolutely,
that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. What, what type of warnings do you have on the food allergies on the packets and everything? You can't even sell peanuts anymore around here. That's got to be crazy.
That's true. That because like you think about all the different alien species from around the world.
Yeah.
Or around the galaxy, excuse me. Yeah. And the ways in which each one has developed and what they can eat and what they can't eat. Yeah, I don't know. I that's a really great question. You know,
let's,
I'm really glad that Star Wars doesn't ever try to answer these questions because that would ruin the fun of it.
Wouldn't it?
So we don't have to worry about that happening. But we did have something we wanted to talk about today, John, that had nothing to do with any of that. and it actually has everything to do with The Last Jedi. And one of the things is we've been reading the comic, you and I. We read the comic, the Captain Phasma comic. And that answered the question specifically of how she escapes from Starkiller Base. And not only that, but then what happened after that. Mm-hmm. And so I found it like, and we've both read the Phasma book. We talked about it over on the 602 Club together. Yep. So we don't want to repeat a bunch of things that we've said here. But I just wanted to ask you, what did you think of this comic and the way that they kind of piece together what it is that happens to Phasma and how she gets away and the way that she covers her tracks in this?
You know, I'm glad you say the way she covers her tracks because, and this isn't really a spoiler because it happens in the first opening panels, first couple of pages of the book. Something I had not even considered was, okay, we all know she's going to escape the trash compactor and make it into The Last Jedi.
Right.
I had not even considered the fact that she would have to come up with a cover story so that she wasn't blamed for the shields being taken down.
Yeah.
I hadn't even really thought about it. I was like, oh, Faz is going to make out. All right, does it really? And then they have that tidbit in there. And I thought to myself, you know, that's really a good point. I'm so used to the bad guys not doing something that will, I mean, I'm used to Vader just killing people immediately for, you know, insubordination or screw ups.
Yeah.
So like this is an added step where I think that actually in and of itself casts a very interesting light on Phasma, because much like Kylo Ren, much like Hux, she's a shadow of the Empire.
Yeah.
Like the villains of the Empire, like Vader, like the Emperor, like the Inquisitors, their screw-ups are simply a matter for record, and they just keep moving. Whereas Phasma appears to be part of a system where people cover up their shortcomings, and it also casts into light that she's not all-powerful, that she's simply really good at her cover stories and making herself seem really important. And so, I mean, that was my big takeaway. It's sort of the same thing as the book, but in this it was very interesting because it was specifically tied to the films, and so I thought that was a very good thread for them to tie through here.
The thing that kind of interested me the most about this, and I wanted to ask you a question because I kind of wondered this, like, why is she so worried about somebody finding out, like, how is somebody going to find out about her indiscretion here
with the shields?
With the shields, like, does when Starkiller Base does it like upload its data to
apparently
to the finalizer or something? Like, is that why she's so worried about this? Because I couldn't figure out specifically, like, how anybody would know it was her when the base has been destroyed.
I will acquiesce this point specifically because the added step of her having to go after somebody who was supposedly in possession of the information. Well, once that person is stranded somewhere, who cares? And I think that again, it might just speak to the nature of her character that she's obsessive about controlling her image. And in a sense, it's almost like Phasma is the social media trooper. She's obsessed with cultivating her persona.
That's a good, Well, and she really is kind of so worried. I do think that there is this point where she really is so worried about anybody ever knowing anything about her that could be used against her. Mm-hmm. And so this is the thing that I think I also wanted to ask you. So because we both read the book, do you feel like that you would have gotten as much out of this comic if you hadn't read the book and had that experience with that as well, so that you kind of could put these two together and create a cohesive whole that really gives you this overarching picture? Do you feel like this was enough if this is all you read?
Yes, I do think it's enough if it was all that I read, but I do think it's enhanced by the book. For me, this works the way that Lucas originally structured the stories, where they worked very well together, but they could work extremely well independently. You had enough mm-hmm. in that story that if you just jumped in during Return of the Jedi, you got it. You pick up, but then you go back and you watch Star Wars and Empire, and you're like, oh, wow, that's really deep. And the same way that the prequels did, where, you know, I always make reference to the friend where when I finally showed her episode 3 and then she watched episode 4, she said, wow, that fight between Obi-Wan and Vader, that has a whole other dimension to it now. I think that this is much the same way, where if I just read the comic, I'd be like, wow, that's intriguing. Okay, she grew up on this type of planet, and wow, she's obsessed with this. But having read the book, I think it just resonates that much better. Do you agree, or do you think that these are tied in such a way that one, like, they can't exist independently?
I honestly think that they can... I do. I think they can exist externally from one another. Like, you don't have to have them, but I do feel like that the comic is deeply enhanced by the fact that I have read the book. I was trying to divorce myself from that, from having read the book, and ask myself that question, like, would I get as much out of this? And like you said something that kind of made me wonder, would I get as much out? Because you said that she was born on a planet. She's from a planet that's very similar to this. But we don't know that from the comic, because the comic she's been to a planet that's like this. Like, she's familiar with a planet. So, like, there are things... it's not a bad thing. I was just kind of wondering... I think, you know, if somebody didn't want to read the book, they'd get a lot out of this comic if they didn't have enough time, say, to do that before the movie comes out. I would highly recommend this comic because I think it still does a lot of the things that the book does, but goes into greater detail. Like, this is kind of like, feel like the Cliff Notes version of what Delilah Dawson does in the book.
I think that's a good comparison. The only thing where I would say it ventures a little bit into that gray area where you pick up that she's from there is it has that flashback to her when she is presumably a younger girl climbing the rocks. And she has that flashback, and she has the slip where she says,
"Right, Siv." You're absolutely right. How did I?
But the thing totally is, it's very quick. That doesn't mean, like, it's unclear who Phasma is in that series of panels. It is legitimately, I'm convinced, especially I went back to one panel in specific there, and the word balloon is aligned in, so because the way a word balloon is done, for anybody who hasn't read this comic or has never read a comic in their lives, you have the word balloon, which is just that oval shape that has the words in it, and then you always have that little hook that ties to what character is speaking at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a point where that hook comes down and it is actually unclear as to who it is that is speaking a specific line that would speak to who Phasma is in that panel. And that would very much indicate whether she was from the planet they're in that flashback, or whether she went to, you know, like, it's one of those things that very much, I think, I think they were being very clever, because they could have made it very clear who was speaking there, and they didn't. And, you know, so long as we're talking about that and the conscious decisions with the art, I really want to give a shout out to the art, because even though it's not the same art team, the art is very similar to the Lando comic. has the same sensibility, the same sort of line work to it. And I just really, I mean, this is a big thing, I think, with comic books. It's very important, especially in the modern age, for the art to really be something that is very pleasing and well composed. And I have to give a lot of credit, because there are sort of two schools you can go to with comic book art. You can go to the McFarlane, Lee, Liefeld, Arthur Adams school of line work, or you can go to a more gesture-based line work. And the thing is, the art in this comic is where I tend to go nowadays, because the gesture art carries a fair amount of emotion to it. Like, it's rougher when it needs to be in distant shots, and it's cleaner when it needs to be. Like, there are a couple of shots of Phasma when she's in disguise that are really crisp, but then it can get very gesture-based later. And it's so I just really want to heap a lot of praise on the art, because I'm a big fan of comic book art, and I think that this is in a very nice spot. Now, I know that you're also a big fan of comic book art, and I know that you also tend to lean toward some of the superhero titles that, like, DC has. Does this mm-hmm. art appeal to you, or was this a sort of a stretch for you?
No, I think actually that the artwork here, one of the things I really liked about it was I feel like it's really beautiful art. It feels very evocative of the Star Wars trilogy in a way, like even the big splash pages where there's space battles happening, like when she is escaping from Starkiller Base and the massive battle is happening outside from her, and you see Poe's X-Wing flying by. Like, it's just gorgeous art. It's this huge page of art. It's really well done.
Yeah.
And I like it immensely. Like, I think it's just really well done, and it fits Star Wars pretty perfectly. And it makes it kind of, I don't know, it just feels like a joy to read. It feels like you're watching Star Wars, you know? And that's what, if you're going to do comic book art for Star Wars, you want to evoke the feeling of, hey, this is Star Wars that I am reading. I feel like that I'm actually in a Star Wars movie at this moment. And so I think that they do that with the art, and it's really fantastic. Now, I do want to ask you one more question that was really burning in my brain mm-hmm. with this. Mm-hmm. Does every single planet have to have some sort of tentacle monster in Star Wars that's bigger than the last tentacle monster you saw?
Yeah.
It's just a question.
I hear you. I hear you on this one, because it really is sort of like tentacle wars at this point. And, you know, you go to the Rathtars even, and it's like everything's got tentacles now. And, you know, of course, the very disturbed part of my cultural knowledge, you know, is instantly like, is there like a hentai vibe going on in Star Wars? I sure hope.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I
really don't want that to be the case. So I'm just going to steer clear. But, you know, maybe it's just because of the fact that they put themselves on a rocky shoreline planet with lots of water. That's mm-hmm. just the type of creature that makes sense. I will give them credit for, even though, you know, you had the big tentacle monsters, the ones at the end, which were like these almost centaur octopus hybrids, I thought were pretty mm-hmm. darn cool. I was like, okay, that's a good spin on this. I kind of yeah. dig what's happening yeah. here.
No, I do agree with that. I mean, I felt like it was, again, it's pretty interesting. It just seemed funny to me that we do kind of have a lot of these kind of monsters, and it's just kind of funny to me. So I'm not really complaining. I just was, it was more of a snarky question. So I apologize.
Well, I'll just, you know what,
listeners,
you know what, I'll say there are so many humans on different planets. Why not more tentacle
that's
monsters?
True. That's fine. Yeah, that's true. Apparently, you know, the evolution of the Star Wars galaxy, really whack.
So here's, but the thing is, I know that this is sort of like a tangent sort of thing, but that actually makes me think about the Rathtars, because I haven't read any of the supplemental stuff about like where Rathtars are from or anything. Are they also from a water planet? Like, is that why they have tentacles, or are Rathtars still something that's just like, this is just a weird thing that appeared in The Force Awakens, and we're not really concerned about running across them?
You know, I don't I think that they've just been like mentioned in other places. I don't really feel like we've gotten a lot, if anything, to do with them.
So they're sort of like the Rancors, where they like the Rancor monster in Return of the Jedi was a one of a kind thing.
Rancor.
Until Courtship of Princess Leia, where you found out there were a ton of them on what was considered Dathomir in that book.
Yeah.
But then of course you have the Rancor monsters on Felucia in the Force Unleashed video game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, shouldn't Rathtars be slotting into that? Shouldn't somebody have taken a crack with Rathtars, like where they're from? There's got to be some planet where there's like a ton of Rathtars. Although maybe nobody knows where that is because everybody that goes there winds up dead. I don't know. I'm just sorry. Ooh, just talking about tentacle monsters takes me down the Rathtar thing, and I'm just curious now.
No, I mean it's a good question, honestly, and it's it is one of those things that is kind of fascinating to me when we read a comic like this. And I the reason I ask that too is that if you read a lot of the comics, they're do tend to be a lot of overblown, ridiculously sized monsters in these Star Wars comics, even for Star Wars sometimes. And so this just happened to be a part of that. I wanted to ask you too, you know, as we see her escape, we see that she actually saw the battle between Rey and Kylo, yeah. Which I think is really interesting.
Okay, so one word reaction for you, positive or negative to her having seen it?
Meh.
Okay. So you nice non-committal.
Like,
I
felt like it was a little bit too convenient.
Yes.
Like that she just happens to go by the spot where they're battling.
Spot on. It is the same thing. It reminds me of when we talked about the first Aftermath book over on 602 Club. And I think it was...
We'll always have Endor.
Yeah, it was We'll Always Have Endor.
Because everybody was there.
Right, everybody was there. I don't... Starkiller,
and their dog.
Starkiller Base was a planet. I don't like the idea that everybody was on one part of the planet. That's just not... I mean, I maybe would have even been more okay with it if she had seen it when she was flying overhead. Or like the battle was over and she saw the Falcon going off and Kylo Ren laying there and she's like, well, I could go back for him, but oh, there's Hux's shuttle. Okay, whatever. Because that's cut out from the movie. It's in the novelization, but they could have taken a couple of panels and shown her sort of torn, like with the pilot. You know, the pilot is like, we got to go pick him up. That's Kylo Ren and he's in distress. And then she can say, oh, no, there's General Hux's shuttle. And so you you get that addressed as well. Because, I mean, let's be honest. At the end of The Force Awakens, we know Kylo Ren's coming back, spoilers, in The Last Jedi. But you could literally watch The Force Awakens and just believe he's dead at the end of it. They were not obligated even to bring him back.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So maybe it would have been nice to have that addressed here.
I don't know.
That's just a thought that I had.
No, I think I actually think that that's a good point, and not one that I had thought of beforehand. Like, why? Yeah, because you're absolutely right. You could just think that he's dead.
Because and especially if Phasma has such an incredible Jones to kill Finn, and he's like tagged or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't some sensor on her helmet have gone off and be like, "Hey, look, Finn's over there."
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, it's, you know, like you, this is like nitpicking on such a granular level. This is like molecular level nitpicking.
Absolutely.
Baseline.
But I mean, it is an interesting thing to kind of think about, I think. And I, one of the things I think, though, that this comic really does is it does go to reinforce just how bad Phasma really is. And just how not good of a person she is, and how I think she is not a character that we're going to look for her to be redeemed in any way, shape, or form. I think in any aspect. Like, we're, that's just, that's not going to happen with this character. And I think I'm really excited about that. The fact that we're not looking to do that with her. We're not looking to go in that direction. I think it makes it, you know, much more exciting that we're going to deal with her on the level of she is just an all-out villain. And we really show how villainous she absolutely is. And, like, it's pretty scary, too. She's, like, freaky scary.
Yeah, she absolutely is. And I think that you're absolutely right. There's no redemption song for this character. And she's not just immoral, she's amoral. There is no moral code for her. There's simply what gets the job done for me. Okay, that is what I do. It doesn't matter who she needs to kill to get it done. And in a sense that, I mean, if they play it right, Phasma could be like a truly, from my perspective, a truly breakout sort of character, because she has that sort of, they're giving her with these supplemental materials. We agree, this didn't really come across in The Force Awakens, like, at all. But with these supplemental materials, and this is what I hope they establish in The Last Jedi, that this is a tease for what they're going to do, that we get some sense of her as, like, a true sociopath. Like, she's a Hannibal Lecter-level villain. She is, you know, she'll eat your face if she needs to escape from the trash compactor. That is where I think their opportunity is.
Well, and I think it what is fun about it is that she is an exciting character in that way, in the sense that, like, they've truly made her scary, and they've given her a reason for you as a fan to be kind of freaked out by her and, like, feel like she is worth your, like, that she's kind of like this boogeyman, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of cool that she comes off like that now, instead of, like, just the person and, like, oh, yeah, you've got locked in a trash compactor, you know, like that. She's, she used that as an opportunity to become and to be what she is, which is somebody who is only out for herself. And that is truly very, very scary in the world. Like, we don't get that in Star Wars very much, like, characters that only think of themselves. Like, I was thinking about this the other night, strangely enough, as I was falling asleep. And the idea that the characters that we get that kind of only think about themselves tend to be characters that then become characters that don't just think about themselves anymore. You know, like,
right.
And I was thinking of, like, Han Solo. You know, Han Solo starts off as this kind of, like, a D-bag, right? Like, he's not really a good guy at all. But he becomes somebody who lets go of that and becomes somebody that we all love. So it becomes an arc, and that's great, but it's kind of nice to hit, I mean, you know, a character that just stays a jerk.
Well, and the thing is, her focus, her determination, no loose ends, I think, is their biggest hint that they're throwing at us. Why she would show up and still want to kill Finn, right? Because wouldn't the normal person, even a normal evil person, say, hey, he got away. Okay, whatever, fine. Great. But it's very obvious just from the, you know, the one trailer that I've seen that Phasma and Finn are going to cross paths again.
Right.
And it's because Phasma cannot let it go.
Right.
Maybe that winds up being her downfall, is that she cannot let it go.
You know, that would be something that's, I think, really interesting, because I was thinking about that, too. Like, you know, is she kind of sealing her fate in some way because she's a character that won't allow things to end? I don't know. It's a good thought. Like, I think it gives them a lot of room to play with the character, and that's kind of fun. And I'm excited to see, and hopefully, and I think I'm excited to see the way that Rian Johnson plays that out. I think Rian Johnson is the kind of guy that you would trust to be able to do that and to do it well, and hopefully bring an interesting arc to that and maybe surprise us. Because, I mean, again, as I said earlier, you know, I feel like a lot of this movie seems to be something that's probably going to surprise us. And, I hope with Phasma they continue to surprise us in that way.
Have you ever seen Brick?
I've not seen Brick. So.
Because what I wonder for anybody who's seen Brick, first and foremost, I encourage you to see Brick because I think that it's a very interesting movie. There are people even here on the Nerd Party. I believe that Nerd Party founder and publisher Tristan Riddell doesn't care for Brick too much. If I'm wrong, then he can reach out to us through all of those contact methods.
I'm sure he will.
Yeah. But Brick, I could see Phasma fitting into a structure like Brick because there is a character who is the more amoral figure who strikes at the head of the evil organization, quote unquote, in that. Huh. And I could see a scenario because we're sitting here, we're talking about Phasma. And this is, as you mentioned before, because we talked about her on the 602, that we're getting a lot of Phasma.
Right.
But we're getting nothing from Hux.
Yeah, that is interesting.
So are they telegraphing that Hux is going to fail and Phasma's about to get a promotion? And it's by Phasma's own hand. Hux becomes an impediment to her. And so it's going to be Phasma and Ren by Snoke's side.
Well, and what if it ends up being, you know, Hux finds out something about her that's, you know, distasteful, and then she makes sure, just like Brundle, that he can't tell anyone that, yeah, she did that thing.
And it intrigues me because what could possibly make those Praetorian guards more dangerous than her? Because
that's a good question.
I love their armor. As we discussed on our Rogue One commentary, I have sort of a thing for armor.
It's true.
And the Praetorian Guard armor, honestly, if I'm rolling the dice here, If I'm forced to pick a favorite here, I haven't seen anything outside of still shots from The Last Jedi that feature the Praetorian Guards prominently. The Praetorian Guard armor beats the Stormtrooper and Phasma armor by like 6,000 miles.
Yeah, mainly because I think it looks different, but also it feels like it fits in the universe.
Yeah, but it communicates a real menace to it. So how are these guys more dangerous than Phasma? That blows my mind because I'm looking at that. I'm like, huh, so how could they be tougher? So in a sense, by elevating Phasma, they're making those guys instantly more intriguing to me because, hey, they're more dangerous than she is, you know? So I don't know. Just throwing it out there like that.
I think, you know, reading this comic was really cool for me too, in that, again, the thing that it drove home about her is that she's all about her. By the end of this comic, I was like, man, I hate this character so much, but I kind of love her because I hate her, and I kind of just can't wait for somebody to finally take her out, but then I'll be sad that she's gone. Like, it's just this really strange thing because she has finally kind of become, I think, what they hoped she would be.
Yes. This is fulfilling the promise of what we were told, what we were led to believe about her in the lead up to The Force Awakens.
Yes. Yes.
Which really, really speaks to, I think, the role we're all expecting and needing The Last Jedi to play, is that I think Force Awakens is really well made. I enjoy it. I love it on a level, but it needs the sequel to redeem its shortcomings.
Yeah, absolutely.
It absolutely needs The Last Jedi to do that.
Yeah. So, and I think you're 100% correct. And so, you know, I think if it can do that, it'll be fantastic. And, you know, it's difficult because they have a lot to live up to.
And I think that they've only raised that expectation by having Rian Johnson come on as the, you know, oh, we're going to do a new trilogy with Rian Johnson. It's like, oh, this, if I watch this and I'm not like, wow, not only am I not necessarily excited for that new trilogy that they've announced, but I also sit there and say, what? What am I missing here? You know, like maybe that's why people are going in so muted and avoiding spoilers and all of that stuff. And they want to go in so clean is they know that if this misfires on some level, this is a problem on an emotional level for a lot of people.
I think the interesting thing is that you think about it this way as well. So as you said, Force Awakens, there's a lot of love for it. A lot of people did absolutely love it. But I think it's, for a lot of people, kind of generally accepted that it's, there are some issues with it.
It's set up. It's pure set up.
Yeah. And the scale of those issues goes up depending on who you're talking to, right?
Yeah.
So if this one, you know, doesn't end up working the way that they hope it needs to, and really deliver on some of that setup, then you've already asked, you know, the guy who did the thing that has some issues, but we're all hoping the setup makes it, you know, the next one makes it better, to come in and finish it. You know, like I feel like that's a classic catch 22. So, but I would say for everything that we have seen, it does look like it's going to be fantastic. And, you know, gosh, I would highly encourage anybody who's trying to get ready for the Last Jedi. I feel like this really sets you up well without spoiling anything whatsoever for the new movie. Mm-hmm. And it'll probably just make you feel like you understand the character of Phasma even more. And I think you're going to be glad that you read this. And gosh, it's only 4 issues, so it's a pretty quick read.
The collected trade paperback on Comixology right now is only $4.99 for a 4-issue collection.
See, that's ridiculous. That's awesome.
You can't beat that. Seriously. Even
absolutely
if you're not a regular comic book reader, go to Comixology, $4.99. I mean, $5. That's less than you're going to spend on lunch today. Go ahead, grab it, read it. We both highly, if it was twice the price, I'd recommend it. But $4.99, yeah, go now, buy. Please do it.
Well, John, anybody else wants to kind of reach out to you and talk to you about some Star Wars things, maybe, you know, things you're excited about? I know you're kind of away from the social media for the moment, but when you come back and by the next time we've talked, heck, we'll have seen The Last Jedi. The next time we talk, next time we talk on the show.
Yes, the next time we record one of our...
John and I literally talk pretty much every day. So
no, once this show is over, I just throw my headphones down. I'm like, that's enough of rushing for a week. I'm out of here. No, seriously, folks, we're dear friends.
When you're back, kind of from your social media hiatus holiday, where can everybody find you so they can talk, you know, obviously The Last Jedi and the comic and anything else you're doing?
Well, you can find me as Kessel Junkie on your social network of choice. You can find me right here on the network with Mike Schindler co-hosting Great Shot Kid, which recently expanded and redefined itself a little bit. It's an exciting new territory that the show is going into. So I invite everybody to listen to that. You can also find me over on the Trek.fm network, again with Mike Schindler, co-hosting Stage 9, where we explore the works of Star Trek creators, both past, present, and possible, because we have shifted our focus to Mr. Quentin Tarantino and his works because, well, hey, because he said he wanted to do something. And I'm also out in the ether co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. But that's where they can find me, Matt. You are practically a shining beacon in the social media darkness. Where can people find you?
Well, you can find me under the symbol that means hope or under Matt Rushing Show 2 on Twitter and on Instagram. You can
it's
also
like a river.
Find me here on the network doing Owlpost with Drea Kaufman as we talk about Harry Potter each and every chapter, which is brilliant. We love doing that show, and we are making our way through The Prisoner of Azkaban right now, which is so much fun. We're about to hit the big part of the book, so make sure you check it out. You can also find me on the Trek FM network talking about Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones, The Orb. In fact, we just recorded a brand new episode that'll be dropping soon. We hope to have more coming for you as well. We're working on making sure that can happen in the new year, so make sure you check that out. The 602 Club, our general geek show. Gosh, we talk about everything under the sun, fandom-wise, that you love, all the fandoms you love, as many as we can get in. And of course, we'll be talking about The Last Jedi, so make sure you check that out. And last but not least, I do a show with my friend Courtney, and it's called Cinema Stories. And that's kind of where we talk about the morals, meanings, and messages of film through the lens of faith. And so if you that's something you'd be interested, check that out. You can find all of those shows that I do or that John does. They're all over wherever you get your podcasts. But John, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matt, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.